said Butterbur. "And it will be good for business, no doubt, so long as he lets Bree alone."
"He will," said Gandalf. "He knows it and loves it."
"Does he now?" said Butterbur, looking puzzled. "Though I'm sure I don't know why he should, sitting in his big chair up in his great castle, hundreds of miles away, and drinking wine out of a golden cup, I shouldn't wonder. What's the pony to him, or mugs of beer? Not but what my beer's good, Gandalf. It's been uncommon good, since you came in the autumn of last year and put a good word on it, and that's been a comfort in trouble, I will say."
"Ah," said Sam, "but he says your beer is always good."
"He says?"
"Of course he does. He's Strider, the chief of the Rangers. Haven't you got that into your head yet?"
It went in at last, and Butterbur's face was a study in wonder. The eyes in his broad face grew round, and his mouth opened wide, and he gasped.
"Strider!" he exclaimed when he got back his breath. "Him with a crown and all of the golden cup? Well, what are we coming to?"
"Better times, for Bree at any rate," said Gandalf.
"I hope so, I'm sure," said Butterbur. "Well, this has been the nicest chat I've had in a month of Mondays, and I'll not deny that I'll sleep easier tonight and with a lighter heart. You've given me a powerful lot to think over, but I'll put that off until tomorrow. I'm for bed, and I've no doubt you'll be glad of your beds, too. Hey, Nob," he called, going to the door. "Nob, you slow coach."
"Now," he said to himself, slapping his forehead, "now what does that remind me of?"
"Not another letter you've forgotten, I hope, Mr. Butterbur," said Mary.
"Now, now, Mr. Brandybuck, don't go reminding me of that. But there, you've broken my thought. Now, where was I? Nob, stables. Ah, that was it. I've something that belongs to you. If you recollect Bill Fernie and the horse thieving, his pony as you bought, well, it's here. Come back all of itself, it did. But where it had been to, you know better than me. It was as shaggy as an old dog and as lean as a clothes rail, but it was alive. Nob's looking after it."
"What? My Bill?" cried Sam.
"Well, I was born lucky, whatever my gaffer may say. There's another wish come true. Where is he?"
Sam would not go to bed until he had visited Bill in his stable. The travellers stayed in Bree all the next day, and Mr. Butterbur could not complain of his business next evening at any rate. Curiosity overcame all fears, and his house was crowded. For a while, out of politeness, the hobbits visited the common room in the evening and answered a good many questions. Bree memories being retentive, Frodo was asked many times if he had written his book. "Not yet," he answered. "I'm going home now to put my notes in order." He promised to deal with the amazing events at Bree, and so give a bit of interest to a book that appeared likely to treat mostly of the remote and less important affairs away south. Then one of the younger folk called for a song. But at that a hush fell, and he was frowned down, and the call was not repeated. Evidently there was no wish for any uncanny events in the common room again. No trouble by day, not any sound by night, disturbed the peace of Bree while the travellers remained there. But the next morning they got up early, for as the weather was still rainy, they wished to reach the Shire before night, and it was a long ride. The Bree folk were all out to see them off, and were in merrier mood than they had been for a year. And those who had not seen the strangers in all their gear before gaped with wonder at them. At Gandalf with his white beard, and the light that seemed to gleam from him, as if his blue mantle was only a cloud over sunshine, and at the four hobbits like riders upon errantry out of almost forgotten tales. Even those who had laughed at all the talk about the king began to think there might be some truth in it.
"Well, good luck on your road, and good luck to your homecoming," said Mr. Butterbur.
"I should have warned you before that all's not well in the Shire, neither, if what we hear is true. Funny goings on, they say, but one thing drives out another, and I was full of my own troubles. But if I may be so bold, You've come back changed from your travels, and you look now like folk as can deal with troubles out of hand. I don't doubt you'll soon set all to rights. Good luck to you, and the oftener you come back, the better I'll be pleased." They wished him farewell and rode away, and passed through the west gate and on towards the shire. Bill the pony was with them, and as before, he had a good deal of baggage, but he trotted along beside Sam and seemed well content. "I wonder what old Barleyman was hinting at," said Frodo. "I can guess some of it," said Sam gloomily. "What I saw in the mirror, trees cut down and all, and my old gaffer turned out of the row, I ought to have hurried back quicker." "And something's wrong with the South Farthing, evidently," said Mary. "There's a general shortage of pipeweed." "Whatever it is," said Pippin, "Lotho will be at the bottom of it. You can be sure of that."
"Deep in, but not at the bottom," said Gandalf. "You've forgotten Saruman. He began to take an interest in the Shire before Mordor did."
"Well, we've got you with us," said Merry, "so things will soon be cleared up."
"I'm with you at present," said Gandalf, "but soon I shall not be. I'm not coming to the Shire. You must settle its affairs yourselves. That is what you've been trained for. Do you not yet understand? My time's over. It's no longer my task to set things to rights, nor to help folk to do so. And as for you, my dear friends, you will need no help. You're grown up now. Grown indeed very high. Among the great you are, and I have no longer any fear at all for any of you. But if you would know, I'm turning aside soon. I'm going to have a long talk with Bombadil, such a talk as I've not had in all my time. He's a moss-gatherer, and I've been a stone doomed to rolling. But my rolling days are ending, and now we shall have much to say to one another." In a little while they came to the point on the east road where they had taken leave of Bombadil, and they hoped and half expected to see him standing there to greet them as they went by. But there was no sign of him, and there was a grey mist on the Barrow Downs southwards, and a deep veil over the old forest far away. They halted, and Frodo looked south wistfully.
"I should dearly like to see the old fellow again," he said. "I wonder how he's getting on."
"As well as ever, you may be sure," said Gandalf, "quite untroubled, and, I should guess, not much interested in anything that we've done or seen, unless perhaps in our visits to the Ents. There may be a time later for you to go and see him. But if I were you, I should press on now for home, or you will not come to the Brandywine Bridge before the gates are locked."
"But there aren't any gates," said Merry. "Not on the road. You know that quite well. There's the Buckland Gate, of course, but they'll let me through that at any time."
"There weren't any gates, you mean," said Gandalf. "I think you'll find some now. And you might have more trouble even at the Buckland Gate than you think. But you'll manage all right. Goodbye, dear friends. Not for the last time. Not yet. Goodbye." He turned Shadowfax off the road, and the great horse leapt the green dyke that here ran beside it, and then at a cry from Gandalf he was gone, racing towards the Barrow Downs like a wind from the north.
"Well, here we are, just the four of us that started out together," said Merry. "We've left all the rest behind, one after another. It seems almost like a dream that has slowly faded."
"Not to me," said Frodo. "To me it feels more like falling asleep again."
Chapter 8. The Scouring of the Shire. It was after nightfall when, wet and tired, the travellers came at last to the Brandywine, and they found the way barred. At either end of the bridge there was a great spiked gate, and on the further side of the river they could see that some new houses had been built, two-storied, with narrow, straight-sided windows, bare and dimly lit, all very gloomy and unchildlike. They hammered on the outer gate and called, but there was at first no answer, and then, to their surprise, someone blew a horn, and the lights in the windows went out. A voice shouted in the dark,
"Who's that? Be off! You can't come in! Can't you read the notice? No admittance between sundown and sunrise!"
"Of course we can't read the notice in the dark!" Sam shouted back. "And if hobbits of the Shire are to be kept out in the wet on a night like this, I'll tear down your notice when I find it." At that a window slammed, and a crowd of hobbits with lanterns poured out of the house on the left. They opened the further gate, and some came over the bridge. When they saw the travellers, they seemed frightened.
"Come along," said Merry, recognising one of the hobbits. "If you don't know me, Hob Hayward, you ought to. I'm Merry Brandybuck, and I should like to know what all this is about, and what a Bucklander like you is doing here. You used to be on the Haygate."
"Bless me! It's Master Merry, to be sure, and all dressed up for fighting," said old Hob. "Why, they said you were dead, lost in the old forest, by all accounts. I'm pleased to see you alive, after all."
"Then stop gaping at me through the bars and open the gate," said Merry.
"I'm sorry, Master Merry, but we have orders."
"Whose orders?"
"The chief's up at Bag End."
"Chief? Chief? Do you mean Mr. Lotho?" said Frodo.
"I suppose so, Mr. Baggins, but we have to say just the chief nowadays."
"Do you indeed?" said Frodo. "Well, I'm glad he's dropped the Baggins at any rate. But it's evidently high time that the family dealt with him and put him in his place."
A hush fell on the hobbits beyond the gate.
"It won't do no good talking that way," said one. "He'll get to hear of it. And if you make so much noise, you'll wake the chief's big man."
"We shall wake him up in a way that will surprise him," said Merry.
"If you mean that your precious chief has been hiring ruffians out of the wild, then we've not come back too soon."
He sprang from his pony, and seeing the notice in the light of the lanterns, he tore it down and threw it over the gate. The hobbits backed away and made no move to open it.
"Come on, Pippin," said Merry. "Two is enough."
Merry and Pippin climbed the gate, and the hobbits fled. Another horn sounded. Out of the bigger house on the right, a large, heavy figure appeared against the light in the doorway.
"What's all this?" he snarled as he came forward. "Gate-breaking? You clear out, or I'll break your filthy little necks!"
Then he stopped, for he had caught the gleam of swords.
"Bill Ferney," said Merry, "if you don't open that gate in 10 seconds, you'll regret it. I shall set steel to you if you don't obey, and when you've opened the gates, you'll go through them and never return. You're a ruffian and a highway robber."
Bill Ferney flinched and shuffled to the gate and unlocked it.
"Give me the key," said Merry, but the ruffian flung it at his head and then darted out into the darkness.
As he passed the ponies, one of them let fly with his heels and just caught him as he ran. He went off with a yelp into the night and was never heard of again.
"Neat work, Bill," said Sam, meaning the pony.
"So much for your big man," said Merry. "We'll see the chief later. In the meantime, we want a lodging for the night, and as you seem to have pulled down the bridge in and built this dismal place instead, you'll have to put us up."
"I am sorry, Mr. Merry," said Hob, "but it isn't allowed."
"What isn't allowed?"
"Taking in folk offhand-like and eating extra food and all that," said Hob.
"What's the matter with the place?" said Merry.
"Has it been a bad year or what? I thought it had been a fine summer and harvest."
"Well, no, the year's been good enough," said Hob. "We grows a lot of food, but we don't rightly know what becomes of it. It's all these gatherers and sharers, I reckon, going round counting and measuring and taking off to storage. They do more gathering than sharing, and we never see most of the stuff again."
"Oh, come," said Pippin, yawning. "This is all too tiresome for me tonight. We've got food in our bags. Just give us a room to lie down in. It'll be better than many places I've seen."
The hobbits at the gate still seemed ill at ease. Evidently some rule or other was being broken. But there was no gainsaying four such masterful travellers, all armed, and two of them uncommonly large and strong-looking. Frodo ordered the gates to be locked again. There was some sense, at any rate, in keeping a guard, while ruffians were still about. Then the four companions went into the hobbit guardhouse and made themselves as comfortable as they could. It was a bare and ugly place, with a mean little grate that would not allow a good fire. In the upper rooms were little rows of hard beds, and on every wall there was a notice and a list of rules. Pippin tore them down. There was no beer and very little food, but with what the travellers brought and shared out, they all made a fair meal. And Pippin broke Rule 4 by putting most of the next day's allowance of wood on the fire.
"Well now, what about a smoke, while you tell us what's been happening in the Shire?" he said.
"There isn't no pipeweed now," said Hob. "At least only for the chief's men. All the stock seem to have gone. We do hear that wagon loads of it went away down the old road out of the South Farthing, over Sarn Ford way. That would be the end of last year, after you left. But it had been going away quietly before that, in a small way. That Lotho—"
"Now you shut up, Hob Hayward," cried several of the others. "You know talk of that sort isn't allowed. The chief will hear of it, and we'll all be in trouble."
"He wouldn't hear naught if some of you here weren't sneaks," rejoined Hob hotly.
"All right, all right," said Sam. "That's quite enough. I don't want to hear no more. No welcome, no beer, no smoke, and a lot of rules and orc talk instead. I hoped to have a rest, but I can see there's work and trouble ahead. Let's sleep and forget it till morning."
The new chief evidently had means of getting news. It was a good 40 miles from the bridge to Bag End, but someone made the journey in a hurry. So Frodo and his friend soon discovered. They had not made any definite plans, but had vaguely thought of going down to Crick Hollow together first, and resting there a bit. But now, seeing what things were like, they decided to go straight to Hobbiton. So the next day they set out along the road and jogged along steadily. The wind had dropped, but the sky was grey. The land looked rather sad and forlorn, but it was after all the 1st of November and the fag end of autumn. Still, there seemed an unusual amount of burning going on, and smoke rose from many points round about. A great cloud of it was going up far away in the direction of Woody End. As evening fell, they were drawing near to Frogmorton, a village right on the road, about 22 miles from the bridge. There they meant to stay the night. The Floating Log at Frogmorton was a good inn. But as they came to the east end of the village, they met a barrier with a large board saying, "No Road," and behind it stood a large band of sheriffs, with staves in their hands and feathers in their caps, looking both important and rather scared.
"What's all this?" said Frodo, feeling inclined to laugh.
"This is what it is, Mr. Baggins," said the leader of the sheriffs, a two-feather hobbit. "You're arrested for gate-breaking, and tearing up roads, and assaulting gatekeepers, and trespassing, and sleeping in shire buildings without leave, and bribing guards with food."
"And what else?" said Frodo.
"That'll do to go on with," said the sheriff leader.
"I can add some more if you like it," said Sam. "Calling your chief names, wishing to punch his pimply face, and thinking you sheriffs look a lot of tomfools."
"There now, mister, that'll do. It's the chief's orders that you're to come along quiet. We're going to take you to Bywater and hand you over to the chief's men. And when he deals with your case, you can have your say. But if you don't want to stay in the lockholes any longer than you need, I should cut the say short, if I was you."
To the discomfiture of the sheriffs, Frodo and his companions all roared with laughter.
"Don't be absurd," said Frodo. "I'm going where I please, and in my own time. I happen to be going to Bag End on business, and if you insist on going too, well, that's your affair."
"Very well, Mr. Baggins," said the leader, pushing the barrier aside. "But don't forget I've arrested you."
"I won't," said Frodo. "Never. But I may forgive you. Now, I'm not going any further today, so if you'll kindly escort me to the floating log, I'll be obliged."
"I can't do that, Mr. Baggins. The inn's closed. There's a sheriff house at the far end of the village. I'll take you there."
"All right," said Frodo. "Go on and we'll follow."